Thanks for checking out the Reveal Vineyard podcast. Our mission is simple. Find God, find others, find yourself. That's it. We hope through these conversations, your spirit will be stirred. For more information on Reveal, you can visit our website at www.revealvineyard.com.
Oh man, I love this series we're in right now. Those are some great intros for this. God never said that this series we're in. This is a great series, and Pastor Morgan led it off last week when she said that God will never give you, God never said that above all else, what He wants you to be is happy. That's not what God said. God said He wants you to be holy, not happy. This is week two of this series, and I believe this is the biggest misbelief about what God never said. And let me start by this. A pastor once told me this phrase, and I believe it's very true, and so you guys agree or disagree with this. Here's the saying is, we, meaning you and I, are either about to go through a difficult season in life, we are in the middle of a difficult season in life, or we just came out of a difficult season in life. Everybody kind of agree with that? Yeah? I'm in the Air Force, and I used to work on the flight line. I'm an instructor now, but one of the things that we said on the flight line, and I believe this holds true, is this. Bad things comes in threes. Don't ask me why. It's just a coincidence. I don't know, but when we're out there, if somebody gets a safety violation inside your shop, it's almost guaranteed that two more are coming your way within the next two or three days. And that does not go over well with leadership. But that's just the way it goes. If something happens, go ahead and get ready for two more to come your way. Doesn't life seem that way sometimes? If you're going through financial problems, lo and behold, one day you get up to go to work and the car doesn't start. And it's not just the battery, it's something big that you have to take into the mechanic. And not only that, but a couple of days later, once you get that fixed, the wife calls you while you're at work, and now the dryer doesn't dry the clothes. And the dryer's broke now. It just seems like it keeps piling up. Listen, that could be anything. That's just one, but it could be depression that you have. It could be your marriage that's falling apart. It could be a visit to the doctor recently with some bad news, whatever it is. This is what happens. The weight of all these things, they come upon us, right? And they keep piling on one after another, heavier and heavier, to where we just feel like, I just can't go on. And then a loving, well-meaning Christian comes along and gives you that annoying Christian advice. And it's something like this. He says, listen, God will never give you more than you can handle. Or it's something like the video said, hey, if God closes a door, then He'll open a window. Well, that's cool, God, but what if I live in an apartment building on the third floor? Why would you open that window there? That's not right. Listen, I use these phrases all the time. I'm going to have to apologize to my wife, because when she was going through some of the rough times in her life with anxiety, I used to use these phrases. Jamie, God will never give you more than you can handle. And I wish I could go back in time, and I'm sure she'll tell you right now, she wishes the same thing. And right when I was about to say, Jamie, God will never do it, she would throat chop me to where I would start coughing, and I couldn't finish the sentence, because it's not true. And I'm sure you guys are thinking right now, well, hold on for a second. I thought God would never allow me to go through more than I could handle. That's what I was told growing up, right? That's what my Christian friends, that's what I told people when they were going through rough times. But that tired old phrase that we use seems more like a taunt than it does a comfort to the people we use it on, doesn't it? Well, hear me. God never said that He will not give you more than you can handle. And I know that's hard to hear today. I understand that. I mean, why are we even here if God will allow us to go through more than we can handle? Because there's times in my life where I feel like I am drowning. And I'm barely holding on. And I mean, if that's the case, then I guess God must think that I'm the Incredible Hulk with what I got going on right now, because he keeps throwing me things left and right. So the question we ask is, where did that phrase come from? God will never give us more than we could handle. And why have we misquoted this phrase to our brothers and sisters in Christ? A little over 2,000 years ago, one of my favorite apostles, the Apostle Paul, wrote a couple of letters, two letters, to a small church in the city of Corinth. We know these books in the Bible as 1st and 2nd Corinthians. See, Paul's intent behind this book, behind this, was to remind the Christians that they're going to be tempted, all people are tempted, and often make the wrong choice. You see, what Paul's warning to the Corinthians was is that every day you will deal with temptation and sin no matter what. But with the warning, Paul gives the promise from God. And this is where we get the misquoted, God will never give you more than you could handle. 1 Corinthians 10 verse 13 says this, "No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted," here's the promise, "He will always provide a way out so that you can endure it." Now listen to me, folks. Let's be clear about this verse right now and what God said. Paul, in this verse, he is talking about temptation. He is not talking about suffering. You see, with temptation and sin, we have a choice. We can either indulge in it, temptation or sin, or we can run from it. And the promise that God gave us is that he will provide us a way out to run from the temptation and sin. So with temptation, we have a choice. But with suffering, we don't get a choice. You don't get to choose if you have cancer or not. You don't get to choose if your spouse decides 5, 10, 20 years down the road, "I'm done." Out of the blue, nowhere. You don't get that choice. You don't get a choice if you're the lady who has the miscarriage. You don't get a choice in that. You don't get to choose if you outlive your kids. And that's tough for me. But God never said he would not give us more than we could handle. You see, the Bible tells us story after story after story about how God gave his people more than they could handle. You want to look in, we can look in the book of Judges with Gideon. He calls Gideon and says, "I want you to bring my people back. That's what I want you to do. But I want you to go against 135,000 soldiers, and I'm going to give you 32,000. But out of that 32, I'm going to dwindle it to where it's like 300. And I want you to go fight them now." And Gideon says to God, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. First off, I'm the weakest in my clan. I'm the least in my family. God, what you're asking me to do, I cannot do." You see, David said the same thing with the weight of his sin. The sin had caught up with him in his life. And he said this in Psalms 38, verse 4. He said, "My guilt has overwhelmed me like a burden too heavy to bear." The weight of his sin had caught up with him to where he was done. David went on to say in verse 8 of this same chapter, he said this, "I am feeble and utterly crushed. I groan in anguish of heart." You see, David is saying right here, he's saying, "God, I don't have what it takes. My sin, what I've done in my past, it's overwhelming. It's on my shoulders. I'm ready to give up. I can't do it." We use the New Testament as well. And Jesus himself said this in Mark 14, verse 34. This is just before Jesus was arrested to be taken to the cross. He said this, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to what? To the point of death." He can't go on. So when he said this, what Jesus did is he secluded himself from the disciples. He took himself out and he had to cry out to God. And this is what he said right after this in verses 35 and 36. Going a little farther, he fell to the ground and prayed that if possible, the hour might pass him. Abba, Father, he said, everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will. You see, if I was to put this text in today's language, I think Jesus would have said this to God. I think he would have said, God, this is too much. You're asking too much of me. This season of life that I'm in, it's too hard. It's too brutal. Is there another way out? I believe this verse teaches us that it's okay to cry out to God, even to yell at God, when we feel like we can't handle it anymore. So then why would God allow us to go through more than we could handle? I think there's two reasons why. And the first one is this. I think the first one is to depend upon his presence. Because let's be honest, folks, today, and let's be real. When life is good, when life is going great, and there's no hiccups, we tend to kind of forget about God, right? I mean, you and your spouse are clicking on all cylinders, right? The kids aren't acting a fool right now. They're being good. The house is in tip-top shape. You see, when life is good, we just tend to forget about it. We say to ourselves, God, I know you're still here, but I really don't need you right now. When life is good, God is an afterthought. There's no urgent need for him when everything's going great. But hold the phone, because let life throw you a couple of curveballs that you have to swing at and see what happens. Your tone, the words that come out of your mouth. God, I need you. God, where are you right now? God, I can't believe I'm going through this right now. I don't feel you, God. It reminds me of a story about 8 years ago. I flew back, which I do every year, but 8 years ago I flew back from my fantasy football draft. Don't judge me. Don't laugh. Yes, I do. I fly back home for a fantasy football draft every year, but on this flight, this was different. I have to take two flights to get home, a long flight, big plane, and a short flight, 45 minutes, on a small prop plane. I love to fly, but I hate turbulence. Understand that. At this point in my life, 8 years ago, I believed in Jesus, but didn't follow Jesus. I was a good person. I helped others. I believed God, but I didn't follow God at that time. I say all this because the first flight went great. The second flight, however, we're about 10,000 miles in the air, and then you hear that ding, ding. And when you hear that, you know it's one of two things. One, we're either getting ready to descend because we've made it to our destination. Or two, we're about to hit some turbulence, so you better buckle up. And I knew we'd only been in the air for 20 minutes, so I knew the first one wasn't it. So I'm about to be real with you for this next little bit. So for the next 20 minutes on that plane, I white-knuckled those armrests. I had a death grip on those. I'm not talking about the turbulence to where it's a fun roller coaster ride with your kids. You know, you drop, woo, it's cool. Yeah, everything. No. I'm talking about when you hit it and it drops you and it feels like it's like 10,000 feet. It drops you. I'm talking about where the stuff that you ate comes up in the back of your throat and you got to swallow it back down to keep it from coming out. I'm talking that type. This was so bad that they redirected us to another airport because we couldn't make it through. And all the time, I say this because I was yelling, God, God, I'm not ready to die. God, I'm not ready to die. God, I'm not right to die. God, forgive me for my sins. God, I need you right now. And I remember this little old lady, she put her hand on me. And listen, old ladies, they don't have the buffer zone that I have. I got a bubble. Don't touch my bubble. And she went across the bubble and touched my hand. But hey, that's okay because she's lived. She has that right to do that. I was raised to respect my elders, so she can do it. She put her hand on me. She put her hand on me and she says, it's going to be all right, son. Don't you worry about it. Now, I told you I was raised to respect my elders. So I looked at her and in my mind, I said, hey, you've lived your life. Don't tell me. You're 70-some years old. You're all right, ready to die. I'm 22, 23. I got the rest of my life. That's just not true. So I say all this because isn't it amazing how when life gets real difficult, how we're drawn to the presence of God. You see, one of the reasons why I believe God might allow us to go through more than we can handle is to teach us to depend upon His presence. Listen, there's another story in the Bible about Jonah. We studied it as a church, the book of Jonah and his life. But God told Jonah, "Jonah, I want you to go to Nineveh, and I want you to preach to the Ninevites." And Jonah told God, "Heck no, I will not go. No, I ain't doing that." So when he told him that, Jonah's life, through an odd series of events, started a downward spiral all the way down. And that's where we get Jonah and the whale. But all the way down in that. And listen to what he says in Jonah chapter 2, verse 2. He says, "In my distress, I called upon the Lord, and he answered me." You see, notice what Jonah didn't say. Jonah didn't say, "In my success." No. Jonah said, "In my distress, I call upon the Lord." It's amazing how often we call upon God when life is in shambles, but how little we call upon Him in our success. You see, there's somebody in here today that might have told God no, and for one reason or another, their life is spiraling down right now as well. If that's you, listen to what Jonah said. Listen to what Jonah reminded himself right after this, right after he's at the bottom of a whale's stomach. Okay? And this is what he says in Jonah 2:7. He says, "When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you. I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer arose to you." Listen, church, when you're in a rough season of life, which we're all going to be in because we agreed upon it, we tend to question God. We tend to kind of wonder about God. Well, if God is with me, then why, God, why is this happening in my life? I can't believe God would allow me to go through something like this. I pray one thing, and this happens. God, if you're good and you want me to be happy, then why is this happening in my life? You see, it's crazy how desperately we need God when we're going through that rough season. If you're writing notes down, please write this down, because this is, if you don't pick up anything else, pick this up. Never let the presence of the storm cause you to forget the presence of God. Listen, your child might be rebelling right now from you. Might even have turned away from God. You might have made wrong decisions leading up to when you walk through that door today. You might be the only Jesus follower in your family right now. Listen, they might be moving you to the East Coast against your will, but never let the presence of the storm cause you to forget the presence of God. Church, I say this, and understand me, I'm not saying you can't experience God's presence on the mountaintop when life is great. I am not saying that. But what I am saying is that when life is rough, when you're in that valley, that's when I most experience God's presence. Why? Because all my attention is turned to Him. My focus is on Him. Yea, though I walk through, not around, not underneath, not stop short, not beside, but I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. In my distress, I call upon the Lord, and He answered me. You see, God's promise in what He said is He will never leave us or forsake us. God teaches us to depend upon His presence. The second one is this. The second reason is to experience God's power. His supernatural power. Now, I'll start out this with a story it reminded me of during Easter this year. I went to my mother-in-law's house for Easter, and we brought the Young family, another couple from here. They have three kids, roughly our kids' ages. And we brought them over to the Young's house for Easter to do some, or to my mother-in-law's house, to do some Easter egg hunting and some food. Now, my mother-in-law owns some horses, okay? She owns about four, I believe. And if you know anything about me, and I just talked with a friend this morning, I am deathly afraid of animals. Not horses, animals. I'm talking snakes, spiders, gators, rabbits, dogs, lions, bears, the animal, not the football team, the animal. But I am deathly afraid of all animals. I say this because me and Scott are close friends. But I never knew that he was a horse lover and that he was the horse whisperer. Okay, I'm not lying to you. So here we are in the backyard, and he's like, oh, horses, cool. And I'm, yeah, we'll go out and look at them. I keep my distance. And we got my wife, our wives, our kids. And Scott says, hey, can I get in and pet the horses, Debbie, my mother-in-law? And she says, yeah, get on in there. And not only does Scott pet the horse, but show this picture. Daggone Scott, he starts kissing the horse. Now, at this time, it's no big deal, right? I mean, this dude's crazy. That horse's head is bigger than his leg. I promise you, that is the real deal. But at this time, my kids started to see Scott. You see my daughter in the background. They started to see Scott, and now they start saying things. Daddy, daddy, why ain't you in here? Daddy, get in here. Come on. Come on in here, Dad. Don't be a chicken, Dad. You going to let Scott show you up? Well, they might not have said that. I might have said that to myself, trying to pump myself up to get in there by my manhood. But I thought, you know what? Yeah, I ain't going to let Scott punk me on my turf, on my mother-in-law's house. I ain't going to let him do that. So I had a decision to make at that one moment. Do I let my kids see that I'm not Superman? Or do I get in the cage with that wild animal? And I sat there and I thought about it and I said, you know what? No, I am not going to let my kids see my weakness, and I'm absolutely going to fake this 100%. So I got in that cage, right? And I'm like this, man, I'm stiff as a board. I'm in the cage, kids, you see this? Daddy's in the cage. And they're like, Daddy, touch it. And I'm like, oh, no, I ain't doing it. I'm talking, my heart's pounding. I mean, you see the shirt going like this right here. I've never had a panic attack or anxiety, but I think I had it then. I think I know what that feels like now. But they're like, Daddy, pet it. And I'm like, hey, baby, good job. Yeah, all right, Pumpkin, good job, or whatever the name was, Marley or whatever. So I'm petting it. That's not enough. Now my kids are like, hey, Daddy, kiss the animal. And I'm like, oh, dear. Okay, right on the nose, right in the nose, right where Scott kissed it. I was like, oh, no, this ain't happening, but I can't show my kids weakness. Now they're like, Daddy, put me on there. And oh, gosh, I'm sweating bullets. I might have fainted at one point. I'm not for sure, passed out. But the animal starts walking around me now with the kids on it, and he's taunting me. I can see him looking at me like, yeah. What do you think? What if I kick you? And I'm like, whoa, don't kick me, dude. And I'm freaked out. But listen, I say all this because isn't that the way life is, guys? That we try our hardest to hold on as long as we can, and we even fake it to everyone else to make them think that we're okay with what's going on in our life and we got it under control. Why? Because we were misled when we were younger. We were programmed, or somebody come by and told us that God will never give you more than you can handle. Other Christians told you that. So we have to think, okay, I got to be able to handle this. So I'm bound and determined to do it on my own. Well, listen to me. We were not created to be able to handle everything on our own. We were created to need God, to be desperate, to yearn for God. And when we realize this, that He doesn't expect us to handle everything that comes our way, then we can tap into His supernatural power. The Bible gives a great example of this with the Apostle Paul and the thorn in his flesh. You see, he had a thorn in his flesh. Now, he didn't physically have a thorn in the flesh. It's a metaphor for something. Not for sure exactly what the thorn was. Some scholars believe that it was his vision that was going bad. And on three different occasions, Paul pleaded with God, God, take this thorn from my side. Now, when I mean plead, I don't mean as Paul was going to bed, he said that God, please heal me. Please take this thorn out of my side. Amen. No, I'm talking Paul in three different seasons of his life was in the church, and the church was praying for him. He was probably fasting for this, and the church was fasting, and other churches was fasting for this, all to remove the thorn from his side. Now, if we're going off of people who deserve to be healed and who don't deserve to be healed, I think Paul ranks at the top of the ones who deserves to in Christians. If the scale is about faith, Paul's at the top. If the scale is about how many people somebody brings to Jesus, Paul would be at the top of that. But hear me when I say this, that if you walk long enough with God, I can promise you, you will have your own thorn in your side that won't go away. God, please take this depression from me. God, please take this sickness that my child has from my child. Give it to me. Take it from them and give it to me, God. God, if you do one thing, just save my marriage. That's all I want you to do. God, if you could fix my finances for one pay period, if I had money left over for one pay period, that's all I would ask for. That one thing. And here's the kicker. Is that God could do that one thing. And he still doesn't. See, Paul knew the same thing, and that's why he asked for him to remove it from his side. But listen to what God said to Paul when he asked to take the thorn out of his side. This is what he says, 2 Corinthians 12, the first part of verse 9. He says this, "My grace is sufficient for you. For my power, for God's power, is made perfect in weakness." Now, Paul, he sits back and he's digesting this. He says, well, okay. If I believe in you, God, and if that's true, listen to what he says now, what Paul says back to God. "Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me." Now listen, if you think Paul is crazy there, listen to what he says. He goes off his rocker in verse 10. Listen to what he says now in verse 10. He says this, "That is why, for Christ's sake, I will delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties." Guys, he just said exactly what we go through on a daily basis. He says, I will delight in him. Why? "For when I am weak, then I am strong." When God gives you too much for you to handle, understand you need to tap into his supernatural strength. And here's what we miss as Christians. Many Christians, we experience the love of God, which is the cross and forgiveness. We experience that, but oftentimes we never experience the power of God, which is the resurrection, which was after the cross. And we never tap into that. It's those times in our lives, if you want to think back to a time in your life when you had nothing to bring to the table, you were utterly wiped out of all strength, you couldn't go on, that's when God's power is at its best. So I know what you're probably thinking right now. Somebody's thinking this. Man, I wish so-and-so was here right now because they need to hear this message. Or man, I hope they showed up at 9 o'clock because this is exactly what they're going through right now. Well, I want you to do me a favor. I want you to pick a neighbor and I want you to say this to him. Go ahead. Hey, listen, we ain't going until y'all do it. Turn to your neighbor right here and I want you to say this. This message is not for you. Come on. It's for me. Now, I want you to look at your second choice neighbor. Obviously, the least of the two friends. If you was to rank them, this is a lower friend now. I know this is getting awkward, but sorry. You chose, not me. Look at your second choice neighbor now that's on the bottom of the list. And I want you to tell them this. This message is for me. But you need it more than I do. Listen, I say all this, it's great to joke and laugh. Band, come on up, prayer team. But I'm about to be real with you about what's going on in my life and my wife's life. I told you, you're either in a difficult season, come out of one, about to go in. Well, me and my wife are about to go into the most difficult season we've ever been in. And we're going to have to totally rely on God's presence and power to get us through this. You see, we're in the military, and we got orders to go to Seymour Johnson on North Carolina September 1st. This is going to be the single hardest thing we've ever done. My wife has never left Arizona, and we found Jesus in this church. We found a new life, a new marriage in this church. Now, the military is going to up and move us, and I've never really thought about it until I was preparing for this message. And I tell you about the story about the horse and me and how I was trying to hold on with everything that I had. But that's not the way life works. Paul hit it on the nose when he said, "My power is made perfect in your weakness." So hear me, church. I'm weak. I'm telling you right now. I don't want to move. God is using us in this church and in ways that we never thought possible. Me and Jamie are very comfortable with where we're at right now in life. We don't want to move. We don't want to do this. And what we have to do is rely upon the presence and the power for us to make it through that. I'm weak. I'm tired. I can't do it on my own. If that's you today, and if you're in a season of life that feels like that, I ask you to join me up here and pray. Ask God for His presence and His power. That's what He promises us. Not that we won't go through more than we can handle. There's a prayer team up here if you need prayer. Don't leave here today believing the lie that was said to you that God will never give you more than you can handle.